Good evening, everyone. I would like to call this meeting of the University City Council to order. We apologize for our slight delay. The Monday, March 11th, 2019 meeting is called to order. I'd like to note first that we have an acting city clerk this evening. Ms. Deanna Burris is taking the place tonight of Larit Reese, who is in a training session. So would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay. Councilmember Carr.
Present.
Councilmember McMahon.
Here.
Councilmember Hales.
Here.
Councilmember Cusick.
Here.
Councilmember Smotherson.
Here.
Mayor Crow.
Here. Thank you very much. I believe during the study session, we had a couple of changes that were going to be made to the agenda. I would accept a motion from any member of council that we are going to move the consent agenda item number J2 down under item K, the city manager's report. And Mr. Smotherson asked for a discussion only tonight of district athletic commission. May I have a motion to amend the agenda as presented? Mr. Smotherson, is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We have no proclamations. You have before you the February 25th regular session minutes. Is there a motion that they be approved? Motion by Mr. Cusick. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. You have before you the February 25th joint study session meeting on the EDRST board. Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Carr, is there a second? Mr. Hales, any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Under appointments, I would like to nominate Sue Schmaltz to be a member of the Park Commission, replacing Clarence Olson. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Smotherson.
Yes, sir. Mayor Crow, I would like to nominate Kathy Stratman to the Senior Commission, replacing Dorothy Merritt, whose term expired.
There's a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. There are no swearing in. We've now moved to the first section of the agenda for citizen participation. This section of the agenda is for non-agenda items. It is limited to 15 minutes. When you approach the podium, we would ask that you give your name and address. Limit your comments to 5 minutes. I will try to give you a warning a little bit ahead of time. Please note that when you go over the 5 minutes, it is not only a little bit of a challenge to us, but also to the other people who would like to speak this evening. The first request to speak on a non-agenda item is, I believe, Mark Mannion. Mark, you may want to scoot that up a little closer towards us. I think it's kind of just in the wrong. Thank you, sir. And if you'll hit the button at the bottom in the middle, that will turn your mic on. Thank you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My name is Mark Mannion. I live at number 8 Fox Run Lane in St. Louis, and I am an investor of four properties at Olive in the Inner Boat, 8664, 8676, 8678, and 8664 Olive. About a year and a half ago, John Brown called me, and he had said that he was interested in talking to me about my properties. He said that University City put out a request for proposal to redevelop the Olive Innerbelt area. So I welcomed John to my office, and I have never met John up until that point. And he said, I have a vision to make University City a better place to live and a better place to work. And I said, well, what do you have in mind? He said, I am interested in acquiring all the property between Olive and Woodson on the north and south side. I said, John, that's quite a task. Are you sure you can do something like that? He said, I don't know, but I'm starting with you. So I believe I might have been the first contact that John Brown had on the project. And I said, John, I've owned my properties since the early 1980s. And I said, there have been a couple requests for proposals, but they went nowhere. I said, I believe Hutkin had their toe in the water on one RFP that the University City put out. And there might have been another one that I received in the mail. So why you? He said, well, my father grew up in University City, and he believed in the area. And I have done some other developments in the community, and I believe that I can make this work. So we talked a little bit more about our properties, my properties, and we came to a contract option price on the properties. Well, it's been about a year and a half now, and I've been to not all, but most of the hearings and city council public hearings, etc. And I know we're at an impasse, and the impasse is over money. And it's the community benefits part of the project that seems to be what's causing the stalemate on the development at this point. Well, sometimes I think with what John's vision is and what the city has wanted for a long, long, long time to redevelop this area, that we need to get off this stalemate. We need the city council leaders and the city council mayor sometimes to make a hard decision, and sometimes a hard decision is the right decision. And I believe that John's dream and his vision and what the city is going to get long-term on this project is a very positive thing for the community, not just University City, but the region. So I am in favor of this development, and I am ready for some action to be taken one way or the other. And if it turns out to be the wrong way, I think University City will sit on this property for a long, 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 long time before anything else ever comes about. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Mr. Leif Johnson.
I'm Leif Johnson, 836 Barclay Square, New City. Tishara Jones, the St. Louis City Treasurer, recently tweeted that the city, that is St. Louis City, is only one recession away from bankruptcy. She could be right. Rex Singfield's Better Together is a financial control board to bail out the $1 billion of St. Louis City bonds. The reason for city council government is to broaden the tax base, to pay off the $1 billion debt. The reason for abolishing municipalities is to prevent any resistance to the Rex Singfield's Financial Control Board's collections. The reason for Rex to turn all major government powers over to a handful of persons that we did not elect and have no control over is that he wants dictatorial powers to collect the debt. Singfield has lined up the local movers and shakers. Singfield's Better Together is headed by Susan Sitherwood, CEO of Spire, and four others, including the Chancellor of Washington University. Sitherwood is also the chairwoman of Civic Progress. That's the top 30 CEOs in town. And board chairman of the newly formed St. Louis Regional Economic Development Alliance, a merger of Civic Progress, St. Louis Regional Chamber, and Regional Business Council. You will remember that Singfield funded anti-minimum wage efforts, gave $11 million to get rid of the income tax in St. Louis and KC, tried to smash unions with the right to work, and wants to eliminate public education. His most infamous quote was, quote, "The KKK invented public education to harm the development of minority children." The good thing about Singfield's plan is Singfield himself. What a perfect target. Mr. Fat Cat himself trying to convince Missouri voters to approve a financial control board to fleece the city and county citizens. The last time city and county merger was on the ballot, that is statewide, in 1962, it lost by nearly 75%. This time, sponsored by such an odious person as Sinkfield, we can surely beat him, no matter how much money he has. Unless we make one serious mistake. That mistake would be to divert our efforts away from defeating Sinkfield and instead support the freeholders' plan. According to the state constitution, the only power the freeholders have is to create, in some form, a city-county merger. What's worse is that the freeholders would be appointed by Lyda Crewson and Steve Stenger, both of whom are supporting Sinkfield's Better Together. Every effort we make in favor of the freeholders' plan detracts from exposing and defeating Sinkfield. Do not be fooled. The only power the freeholders have, according to the state constitution, is to plan some form of city-county merger. There is no reason to merge city and county. There is no reason to abolish our local municipalities. Our communities supply the great majority of our basic needs, streets, sidewalks, lights, police, garbage collection, EMS, fire, parks. Voting in our municipalities is probably the most important vote we have. Save our right to vote. Stop the financial control board's rip-off of city and county. Defeat Sinkfield. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Ms. Jan Adams.
Jan Adams, 7150 Cambridge Avenue. I rise tonight to follow up on my letter to the editor that was published in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch recently. As you know, there's a limited amount of words that you can use in a letter to the editor, so I did not go into any details regarding the risk-benefit analysis that I think is necessary. So that's why I'm providing these comments tonight. The city planners and the developer for Olive 170 have presented a cost-benefit analysis, which contains, according to Mayor Crow, an egregious error. However, they have not even attempted to present risk-benefit analyses. So I am presenting some of the risks that I urge both parties to factor into what hopefully will be presented to citizens as the official risk-benefit analysis. I am presenting the risks that I have identified in a chronological order of what I foresee happening if you decide to proceed with the contract with the developer. And I hope that these risks will be factored into what you present to the citizens as a risk-benefit analysis. I am not attempting in this comment, or I'm sorry, I'm going to start over because I lost my focus here. I'm presenting the risks that I have identified in chronological order of what I foresee happening, but I am not attempting in this comment to either quantify or qualify each risk. Number one, a court injunction may halt or delay the development process because, after the $27 million error, the mayor has stated to the media that the city does not intend to submit any amended calculations regarding financial feasibility to another TIF commission. I think this is a wrong decision. Number two, Costco may back out due to delays and complications, and we have no way of knowing what negotiations are taking place between Novus and Costco at this time. We also do not know if Novus may proceed to bulldoze the footprint, knowing that Costco has declined to proceed. Number three, court injunctions and lawsuits may be filed by the various businesses and residents who are subject to eminent domain actions, causing many months and even years of delay. Number four, the developer may back out due to the reduced revenue projections or his inability to obtain the necessary bonds. Number five, The developer may bulldoze the entire footprint for the Costco and then back out due to personal financial deficits that he incurs. Number six, Costco may decide to build a warehouse instead of a retail store due to the trend toward online purchases, and we lose the projected sales tax revenues. And finally, Better Together may pass, and we may lose control of the development. The city should provide us with a detailed risk-benefit analysis and provide any and all documents to support such an analysis before proceeding any further with this development. And I ask that my comments be made a part of the minutes of the record.
Our next request to speak is Mr. Jonathan Brown. Jonathan, you need to hit the button at the bottom, please.
There we go. Good evening. My name is Jonathan Brown. I'm a commercial property owner in the 8600 block of Olive, residential property owner on Mayflower Court, and a residential owner on Richard Court, and I'm the president of Novus Development Company. I'm here, obviously, to speak in favor of the redevelopment plan for Olive and 170. This project has run its full gestation period and needs approval to proceed. The TIF Commission has approved, the majority of property owners have approved, and the best anchor tenant has chosen this site. All it is missing is municipal approval. A recent clarification of expected revenue flows to the city has not affected TIF revenue necessary to make this project viable. The adjustments only affect those revenues that flow to the city apart from TIF revenues, or what is known as bottom half revenue. Please understand that all revenue that is available to a St. Louis County pool city is available to this project, just as it would be to any pool city. It's unfortunate that the consultants wrongly believed that the presence of a TIF would allow the city to directly capture elevated levels of municipal tax, but regardless of that error, the city is still able to realize all the benefits of redevelopment and capture incremental economic growth to which a pool city is entitled. No current revenue will be diverted from the project, and the city will only see increased revenue as a result of this project. Let me repeat that. The only revenue lost that keeps being talked about, lost revenue, is money that was never available to the pool city. Everything that is available to a pool city during a TIF is available through this project, period. Further, and in addition to new services and a new look for this intersection, road improvements will be made to Olive Boulevard. Current standards, which do not exist today for stormwater and water quality, will be built into this 50-acre site, and the project will bring an anchor tenant who is known for being the highest paying tenant in its category, as well as benefit provider. The unnamed tenant, which we all know, is known for their quality as an employer. That is something that every municipality seeks and is available to this municipality if you choose. Numerous property owners have patiently waited for over a year for city action. It is now time for the city to show leadership and vision. Unfortunately, contract deadlines and tenant interests are finite and will not survive endless extensions. Action has to be taken in favor of this project by the TIF Commission and property owners, and it is now time to seize the opportunity to advance University City and position itself and its residents for a bright future. Please adopt the resolution accepting the TIF Commission's recommendation to approve and execute the redevelopment agreement to advance this project. Thank you.
That concludes this portion of the citizen participation of the agenda. We're going to now move forward with the public hearing. I would like to declare the public hearing open for the liquor license for Mandarin House at 6:58. To the clerk, do we have any requests to speak on this issue? And I believe the answer to that is no, because I have none. Any requests to speak? Hearing none, I will close the hearing at 6:58. Now move forward with the consent agenda. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council, the consent agenda consists of one item, that being a liquor license for the Mandarin House. This can be approved by one action of the Mayor and Council.
Is there a motion? Motion by Mr. Hale, seconded by Mr. Cusick. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. City Manager's report.
Honorable Mayor and Council, this item, I'd ask for the J2 to be moved to the City Manager's report because we want to change the funding source that will be used for the replacement of 4 streetlights. And so I would ask for the Public Works Director, Sinan Appleslan, to come up. Included in the staff report is our intention to use capital funding, and I believe that 4 of the lights were purchased with EDRST funding, and so a more appropriate use for the replacement of those lights would be EDRST funds, as well that when we received the insurance payment for the lights, those funds would then go back into the EDRST fund for reimbursement. Is that accurate?
Correct. Okay. Mr. Rose, and those lights consist of the first 4 on the table list that is on the sheet that is in the packet.
Is there a motion? Mr. McMahon, is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Are there any questions regarding the City Manager's Report Capital Improvement Program for street light installation? Ms. Carr.
Okay, so just so I understand, the first 4 lights will be taken from currently from economic development retail sales tax money.
Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, that is correct.
And when the insurance pays something on it, because these were taken out as a result of an accident, then we would reimburse. Do you think it will be 100% or 80%? Do we know?
Honorable Mayor Pro Tem, we are estimating that it will be about an 80% reimbursement that we will see from the insurance company.
Okay, and then one more question. These 4 lights were then put in probably sometime around 2010 or maybe a little bit before by the monies that were then invested on improving the Olive Streetscape. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions? Hearing no questions, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We'll now move forward. We have no unfinished business, no new business. We will move now to council reports and business. Mr. Smotherson had asked that we have District Athletic Commission discuss. Mr. Smotherson.
Mayor Crow and Council, I just this was a simple request, and just to try to get some information about the District Athletic Commission. And I'm not sure if you remember this, but the previous mayor, I guess, was part of set this up in agreement with the school district. And so there's now so that this District Athletic Commission, she also appointed a council liaison. And I'm just wondering if you could look into verifying whether that's something we're going to continue and if that position needs to be filled, because it was previously filled by Councilman Glicker. Thank you.
I believe that the city manager has nodded to me that we will do an examination of where that stands. And As we all learn growing up, you learn something new every day. So we'll see what is happening with that particular commission. Thank you. I didn't mean to skip by any of the commissions or boards that people may want to make a report on before we move to the next part of the agenda requested by Mr. Hales and Mr. McMahon. Ms. Carr.
The Stormwater Task Force met a week ago Tuesday. And in your packets, you are provided with some preliminary data. No, you don't have to memorize it, and there will not be a pop quiz. But this was the data that came back from the surveys that were sent out asking homeowners had they experienced flooding, and if they had, what kind of flooding it was. So as you can see on one of the pages, between the data that the Stormwater Task Force has collected and the MSD data, we have covered all of University City, and it's extensive. And they are continuing, these are engineers, they are continuing to tease the information out of the initial data. So there will be further reports coming, but this was the preliminary.
Thank you. Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to remind everyone that Tuesday, April 2nd, is Election Day, and for everyone to get out and vote. And also, I would like to push a word out there for Prop L. So we need people to get out and vote for Prop L. If you don't know about it, please visit the library's website. It's a so that the library will have a little bit more money to make capital improvements to the building, and we can continue to have this wonderful library in University City. Thank you.
Mr. McMahon. Oh, I apologize.
That wasn't for me?
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you. Mayor, I just wanted to report on some developments with CALIP. They had traditionally been putting together kind of documentary-style movies, and recently they made a change. They were doing shorter videos that had been authorized, and they were doing directed grants for more positive stories about University City. And their first grant round was completed. They had they had 19 applications. They gave out five grants of $3,000 to certain individuals, and I'm just going to try to get through them real quickly. If I mispronounce their names, I apologize. Byron Selton for University City, A Day in Bloom. Thomasina Clark for The Loop, Authentically Nostalgic. Mike Godonnelly for A Word on the Street. Eddie Ryan for United U City, United by Great Food. Jose Garza for A Brief History of the Lewis Center. And there was also a $1,500 grant for a student at University City through one of the teachers at the University City High School. So those are going to be being produced. The money is going to be dropped off as soon as they finish some paperwork and get those going. And a second grant round will then start soon thereafter to keep that momentum going. Then these videos will be put out throughout U-City on different platforms and really kind of change the direction of CALIP, but still meeting its requirements of teaching filmmaking, videos, and the arts in that direction. So that's the report from CALIP.
Thank you very much. The next agenda item was put on the agenda by Ms. Council Members Hales and McMahon. We have a number of requests to speak to the sponsors of the discussion. Do you want the council discussion first or the citizen comments first? Mr. Hales, Mr. McMahon. Well,
I suppose I could give... I'd like to just sort of give my intro to it, and then I think... For those in the room who might not be aware, I think many of you are aware of this agenda item. Saturday before last, Councilmember McMahon and I were on the phone multiple times during the day, as I was with the city manager, regarding the parties that took place in Rosedale Heights and Ames Place relative to Mardi Gras with about 900 to 1,000, I think, of their students. Following that, there's a letter that's been circulated, and I would like to just read the contents of that into the record. This was a letter that I sent to officials from Washington University I'm writing all of you to share my frustration and anger related to the events I observed that transpired this past Saturday with your students in the Rosedale Heights and Ames Place neighborhoods. Shortly after 10 a.m. Saturday morning, I received a phone call from a resident about hordes of Washington University students making their way to numerous Mardi Gras parties in the 6600 blocks of Washington and Kingsbury, and that the WashU police were not present. I arrived about 10:30 and stayed for almost 3 hours. I observed the first WashU police officer arrive shortly after I arrived, with the first U City police officer arriving about the same time, followed by a second U City police officer and a second WashU police officer. The crowd was growing exponentially, with students literally coming from all directions on foot and by car. I watched over that next 30 to 45 minutes. I watched as a third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth and eventually a ninth University City police car showed up as the crowds grew to fill the rear yards and alley behind Kingsbury and Washington. Our police officers estimated they dispersed close to 1,000 people over a two-hour period. I want you all to understand that all of our uniformed University City police officers that were on duty that day were required to respond for the calls related to your students and their parties in the 6600 blocks of Kingsbury and Washington Avenues. In all, 10 police officers responded, along with two WashU police officers, and they did an excellent job under very challenging circumstances. I cannot emphasize enough, it took all 10 of our uniformed police officers on duty to respond, and they were assisted by just two WashU officers. Nothing about what transpired on Saturday is acceptable. It is not acceptable to me. It is not acceptable to our residents, to our police department, and I'm certain to our entire city council and administration. For at least 2 hours, my neighborhood, the neighborhoods of my constituents, and the neighborhood, every neighborhood across our city was without a police presence because they were dealing with nearly 1,000 party goers in one block of the first ward in what the university has made into its North 40. As I asked one police officer after the crowds had dispersed, what if we had an emergency situation anywhere in our city right now? The response was, quote, we'd be screwed. Where does that leave our community? As you know, we've long had conversations about the drain of our city resources directly related to Washington University. We've talked about streets and sweeping, among other issues, but this weekend clearly highlights the most important impact, the impact to public safety for our residents in our city. There's no question in my mind that what transpired this weekend and the police resources required relative to your students left the rest of our citizens of University City unnecessarily and unreasonably vulnerable. I'm told we issued 8 summonses and made 1 arrest. I think your students were quite fortunate in that regard, as I'm sure our police department was most focused on dispersing the massive crowds. In all, I observed well over 100 students walking down our streets and sidewalks with open containers of alcohol, from cans and bottles of beer to one young woman drinking directly from a bottle of wine as they made their way to the parties. I observed 2 students urinating on the fence of a single-family home at 6663 Kingsbury, and observed other partygoers walking through their yards, even entering the backyards of single-family homes. They apparently felt quite comfortable with their behavior. Later that day, I was saddened to learn of a fire in one of the university-owned properties on Cates. I'm thankful that no one was injured. I happened to watch the Clayton Fire Department ladder truck and a command vehicle respond to the scene and drive on Hanley from my living room window. I cannot help but be reminded that all of the resources deployed to protect your property and your students, of all the resources deployed to protect your property and students, only Clayton is compensated by the university to provide your fire protection. This weekend highlighted what our community has been discussing for a number of years now. While Washington University is a wonderful institution to have as a neighbor, the university has caused an indelible strain on our community and our city's resources. Our relationship is terribly out of balance. Our neighborhoods were not designed to be your North 40. Perhaps you have the luxury of not being accountable to our citizens, but I do not. How would you suggest we explain to our citizens why there were no police in their neighborhoods because they were forced to deal with your students' block parties? We should all be very thankful that there was not a life-threatening emergency for any of our 35,000 residents during that period of time on Saturday. Our community was put at an inherent risk, and our police officers were put at an inherent risk as they were one by one called from our neighborhoods to assist and respond to your parties. As each officer was pulled away from their district to assist, it left the other officers in a potentially vulnerable position of having to be the first one on scene to a dangerous call in another part of the city without immediate backup available. I will close with this. It is unconscionable for our city and for our taxpayers to bear the burden of providing all of our on-duty uniformed police officers to deal with your students and their parties. It is unconscionable that our neighborhoods were without a police presence for nearly 2 hours because every available resource was required to deal with your students and their parties. Whether it be Wild or Super Bowl Sunday or Mardi Gras, there is never an occasion for the public safety of our community to be compromised in the way it was on Saturday. What happened on Saturday cannot happen again. Collectively, we have to find a way to find balance in our relationship so that the impact of the university is not to the detriment of the neighborhoods and the public safety of our city. I look forward to having those conversations soon. And I did hear back. I understand there are representatives from WashU here tonight. I don't know that we have any requests to speak from them. But I do appreciate the response that I've been given, and I do plan to meet with representatives of the university very soon. That is where I'll leave it for right now. I have a few more things later.
Mr. McMahon, would you like to speak, or would you like to wait?
I'll speak.
You're not on.
Thank you. I'll speak, hopefully, and make it brief, and then we can open up to the citizens so we can listen to their comments on this issue, which I think has been an issue that's bubbling just below the surface for a long time, and it's time that we move on. But I received an email today from a resident, and she was really right in the heart of this area, and I asked her if I could read her email tonight at the meeting because she couldn't attend, I thought it just touched on what a day in the life is for a resident in that area, and covers lots of things. And to be open, it doesn't just discuss WashU. It also, you know, it suggests that maybe there's some responsibility here on City Council. Have we taken it? Have we done what we could do, us or past? But these are her words, and this is what I promised her I would read tonight. And she says, "Greetings, Mr. McMahon. We live at 6800. The 6800 block of Kingsbury, I've already made my views known to Jeff Hales and in past to Paulette Carr. I'm not able to attend tonight's meeting, so I wanted to at least communicate to you my views. In the past, the former mayor and most of council have not been responsive to the difficulties created by proximity to Washington University. We live behind COCA and around the corner from Symphony School and across the street from a block of Washington University apartments. Had I, as a newcomer to St. Louis, known 19 years ago the reality of the situation or what the future would bring, I would have never bought here. The city approved the expansion of COCA against our stated wishes and has taken no notice of the congestion and parking issues created by increased population density of dormitory apartments, not to mention the slowdowns caused by the trolley two blocks away, the assurances by COCA and WashU that they would coordinate events at those two venues to minimize neighborhood impact were, of course, nonsense, and I checked their schedules and found regularly scheduled events simultaneously. Problems of construction. Last year, we were evacuated from our home for the day in the rain with two dogs, a sick child, and no coats because a Washington University contractor hit a gas line in front of our house and next to our car so that we could not use it to escape because the ignition might have ignited the gas. I, my sick son, my two dogs just stood on the corner in the rain watching a stream of emergency vehicles arrive while we waited for my husband to arrive from West County so we could sit in the car and try to figure out where we could go to wait with two wet dogs and a sick child. We never received as much as an apology. Our lawn was torn up by laying of pipes and was inadequately repaired so that I will need to fix it myself again. I don't think they fixed the chopped sidewalk. I also work at home on a computer and have to endure the construction noise. Problems of partying. Each year we endure numerous revelries, whether for so-called holidays or just because warm weather permits. These often require police attention, students pouring out
of the main party site like attendants falling out of Groucho's packed stateroom. They flood the streets, noisy at all hours. We arrived home once at such a time and were struck by a log jam, unable to get to our house for a considerable time. On that occasion, I had gone to pick up my husband from his office because he was working quite late and began to feel ill, too ill to drive home. But I wasn't able to get to our house to get him home to bed. Now our son, now 12, has since he was a little one, has been kept from sleep by such disruptions and often expressed fear of the bad people where our street were out on the streets and would they come get him. On one occasion, I opened the front door to try to ascertain which building the groups of students were heading to, and I was confronted by a student urinating on a tree in front of our house. On a different occasion, in broad daylight, and for no apparent reason because there was no party, students were urinating in front of a Wash U building on Washington across from the post office. I was simply walking to mail a letter. Following such revelries, there are bottles and cups strewn throughout the neighborhood. I came home from my father's funeral to find solo cups and beer bottles in my lawn. Problems with parking. This is an ongoing issue. And I hate to just ramble on, but this is the day in the life of one of the residents. Problems with parking. This is an ongoing issue that regularly disrupts peace of mind. There is no security with parking in front of our houses, which is supposed to be private, will be available. I have to think twice before using my car on weekends because I may not be able to park when I get home. But it's not just weekends. I come home from shopping with a car full of bags and find spaces taken. Over the years, we have come home from the hospital, doctor's office, urgent care to find we couldn't park near our home. The last time I checked, we are taxpayers, while Washington University is not. I don't understand why our concerns are not addressed and why the university needs to get off scot-free. It seems to me that Washington University needs to pay for services rendered in addition to paying for its upkeep. They should need to pay a fine for the noise and party complaints requiring attention of the police. Perhaps they will impose penalties on the students long enough to get their attention. It seems to me that the concerns need to be more strongly considered by the city with issues of zoning, population, and density, and so on. Sincerely, Carol Wise. And I just want to point out before I move on a little bit that we are looking into issues of zoning and population densities and so on. We're looking into those issues and how we can maybe impact these issues through those means. But what I did today also was I looked up the student code of conduct at Washington University, because it seems to me that's one of the arguments that we have here, is that doesn't Washington University bear some responsibility for the students that might be causing some of the issues over in those areas? And when you read the code of student conduct, generally it kind of defines out University City. Most of the definitions relate to students and defines them as students or Washington University property or affiliated properties. And I get that they might have an issue with how do we police people that don't live on campus? How do we watch out for them? But when you read through it, you find things like number 6, conduct which is disorderly, lewd, indecent, and which disturbs the peace on university-owned or affiliated premises. They don't define affiliated premises, so whether or not an entire apartment building that might be lived in by Washington students is affiliated, that's another question we could talk about. But certainly you would have to agree that in their student code of conduct, urinating in front of someone's home or urinating on a Washington University property, as spelled out in that email, would fit this. And whether or not students are being disciplined for that, we'd like to know. Also, in the student code of conduct, when there are misdemeanors or felonies that might have occurred within the jurisdiction of University City, they should be referred to us. That's what they say. But they don't say they shall. They may. The question is, how many have been referred, let's say, in the last 5 years, so that we know maybe what Wash U police have found out about, but did we get told about it? Could we take steps to then be the adult in the room to discipline those students? I don't know. Number 10, use, possession, manufacture, or distribution of alcoholic beverages except as expressly permitted by law or university policy. I think what Mr. Hales witnessed with open containers up and down the street would be a violation of that code of student conduct, and that's not limited to Washington University property or buildings. It's anywhere. Unauthorized entry, deliberate destruction of, damage to, malicious use of, abuse of university public or private property. As Mr. Hales witnessed with people walking through our residents' yards, that would violate their code of conduct. What if the argument from Washington University is these students rent from private individuals, that's something that's in University City, then, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at our zoning, our enforcement, how we take care of it. If we have to step up to be the adult in the room to help those young individuals learn what it means to be a good neighbor, then that's what University City needs to do. And that's, I think, the tone and a direction that this council might be in agreement on would be moving towards. If we want to work cooperatively, but if we have to, those are the things that we do as a city. Thank you.
We have a number of requests to speak on this issue. I think the first one is Suzanne Greenwald. And again, please give your name and address when you come to the microphone, and please follow the five-minute time limit. Thank you. Bottom center.
Okay, thank you. Suzanne Greenwald, 836 Barclay Square. I am here tonight to add my voice to the voices of many other U-City residents who are protesting the fact that a wealthy U-City property owner, Washington University, refuses to pay for the services that U-City provides. Washington University is one of the wealthiest schools in our country. Last year alone, their fundraising efforts, which is not their only source of revenue, yielded over $3.75 billion, which was over $1 billion more than they had set as their fundraising goal. Scholarships are offered to those who cannot afford to pay. Washington University does not qualify for a scholarship. I understand that Washington U is not legally obligated to pay property taxes, but what about their moral and ethical obligations? We look to Washington U for leadership. They set an example for their students and their community. I say to Washington U, please don't disappoint us. Please pay your fair share.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Siri Moran.
Siri Moran, 6652 Kingsbury, just down the road from Carol Weiss. Right off the bat, I would like to thank Jeff Hales and the University City Police for their quick responsiveness and efficient crowd management on Mardi Gras Saturday morning. I was the one that called Jeff at 10 a.m., and he arrived in his car at 10:30. He then spent the next 3 hours on Kingsbury witnessing the debacle. Enough has been said and described about that morning. University City has always been and still is in reactive mode to Washington University. Something happens, residents complain, some response either happens or it doesn't, and the university has become used to this and takes full advantage. In what little dialogue we, the residents, have had with the university, we are told that when the students misbehave, we need to call the University City Police. When we complain about student vandalism in our neighborhood, we are told to call the University City Police. And when I say we are told by university representatives in a meeting that they had set up called Neighborhood Voice, that was set up specifically so that we could feel loved by the university. When university staff and students use our neighborhood streets as a default parking lot for the university, residents are told to find redress through city means. When we complain about over-occupancy issues and non-upkeep of the privately owned student apartments on our street, we are told to take it up with University City. Okay, that's fine. The university has inserted a population of undergraduate students into our neighborhoods. If the university shirks their responsibility and turns over management of the behavior of those students to the city of University City, then shouldn't the university pay for that babysitting service? Clayton manages the university. Clayton is paid to provide fire services. We are not. Our fire department is expected to respond to fires at properties that do not generate tax income to cover that service expense. Is that fair? The city needs to evaluate the tools that exist to manage the university, be they creating zoning regulations or enforcing existing occupancy and upkeep ordinances. At the very least, documenting services used and submitting invoices to the university to cover those expenses. I would hope the city will be submitting an invoice for the fire and police services for this past Mardi Gras Saturday and for any future extraordinary expenses. In the long term, services should be routinely billed out to the university since it has been made crystal clear that the university is never going to step up and offer a recompense on its own. And one thing I would like to add. At the last Neighborhood Voice meeting, which was about 2.5 weeks before Mardi Gras, I attended that meeting specifically to ask what the university's plan was to manage the Mardi Gras. I live at 6652. I have, over the years, watched this day become more and more of a bacchanalia. Each year it grows. So this year I was proactive. I went, I asked, I was told, oh, we have it in hand. Oh, no problem. We know it's coming. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Ms. Erin Ginsburg.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, my name is Erin Ginsburg. I live at 430 West Point Court, and I'm here to thank you for addressing the imbalances in WashU's relationship with U City. As of June 30th, 2017, the university's total endowment was $7.2 billion. That's with a B. Washington University has used their tax-exempt status to avoid paying for the police and fire protection services that WashU students use. I'm a WashU grad. My father is a WashU grad. Many of our friends here in town and out of state are WashU alumni. We're talking about withholding our annual alumni donations until the university begins a pilot or payment in lieu of taxes program with University City. It's time for WashU to pay their fair share. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Kathy Freese.
Good evening. My name is Kathy Freese. I live at 6669 Kingsbury. I'm here tonight to support Jeff Hale's letter. I really appreciate you taking such an active role in the problem that our neighborhood has faced. And there are people talking about the larger problem of money, but in the smaller problem of student behavior, I live in one of those neighborhoods where this has been a chronic ongoing problem. I moved into my house in 1980, so I have a perspective of time, and things have been getting out of control. There's been a gradual worsening and encroachment of the students in the neighborhood. The university has made some improvements. They have made some attempts. We have a neighborhood group. I go faithfully to the meetings. I try to keep a positive perspective. I work with a small native plant group, and we're planting native plants on the Melville Walkway with WashU students. But Mardi Gras was not a good day for me. I looked out my back window, and I saw four police cars. I was just getting ready to call the police. Four police cars are already behind me. They're quickly adding up, as are the students. As we've heard, every police officer was in my back alley. It wasn't enough. I was in my front yard. I was chasing out students. There were students on either side of my house, up to assorted bodily functions, and I was telling them to leave. Just leave. I was just going to the party over there. I'm just going through. That's two gates that you have to open up and go through my backyard. What is wrong with these people? So I'm so glad to see this letter from Mr. Hales, because I think while the university has made some attempts at improving student behavior, it's been mostly educational. And when you're drinking and drunk by 10 in the morning, that really goes out the window. That has no effect at all. So I need my city to stand up and help us. Thank you.
Our next request to speak is Judith Knoyer.
Good evening. My name is Judith Knoyer. I live at 6404 Cates Avenue. This is Ward 2, not Ward 1. Nevertheless, I wanted to thank the council persons who have been involved in this whole question of university resources and Washington University. This is an issue that has been on the back burner for a long time, as I understand, although my history in U City is not as long as some of the others. I wanted to thank personally Mr. Hales for all the fine work that he did in monitoring the situation and in keeping the citizens abreast of what was going on, of communicating with the university as well as the police. To Mr. McMahon for his part in bringing this forward. And I would also like to thank Councilwoman Carr, because I was personally involved in the to-do with the fire. I was trying to get out of my street, and it's a one-way street. There was a block at the end because all of the fire trucks were down there fighting the fire. I was able to get out by backing up the fire engine from Olivet came in behind us. I asked Councilwoman Carr what had happened, and she was very prompt in getting back to me with what had happened. She also has communicated very well with us concerning the whole situation. And I want to say that I am very thankful for what I have heard from the council people tonight, the fact that this is on the agenda, and I hope that this is a signal that University City will be going forward to address these long-standing issues with Washington University, and that under new management of our city, we will see University City coming to the table as an equal partner in the dialogue and hopefully the fruitful action between U City and Washington University, to see that University City is attended to in a way that is just and fair. My husband and I will not be giving any more money to Washington University. He's an alumni. But after hearing this tonight, we will not be doing that until we see some positive action. Finally, I am just really outraged by hearing what people in the neighborhood in Ward 1 have had to go through in this whole interaction between Washington University and University City. I thank you all very much.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Patrick Fox.
Thank you. My name is Patrick Fox. I live at 1309 Purdue Avenue. I want to take this opportunity, while the City Council and representatives from Washington University are together in the same room, to again express concerns I have with the untenable relationship that currently exists. The events transpiring over Mardi Gras are just a sampling of what's to come. There are many instances in which the city has provided services without any meaningful contribution from Washington University, and that is not only unfair, it has and will continue to present a major safety concern for both residents and students. Last week, St. Louis County Council member Tim Fitch placed a request for legislation that would put forth on the November 2019 ballot a proposition that would remove the county police's ability to deputize WashU's police department. In his words, this would effectively cripple the authority of Washington University's police. What is the university's plan should this occur? Will University City have to yet again pick up the slack? It will have to. The only time the university ever pays taxes is when they benefit in other ways, mostly by its use of historic tax credits. It is extremely manipulative that the university exploits historic tax credits in our city by its related entities until it no longer suits them financially. Many other distinguished universities find it appropriate to contribute to their local government to help defray the cost burden placed by them being a part of the community. Just think about that. This is a community. Other than providing a place to learn, how else do you contribute to our community, Washington University? You have gained nothing but token grants that in no way fill the enormous inequity that you create for residents. Why have you not actively pursued a pilot? You have considerable resources to do so. In your fiscal year ending June 30th, 2018, your endowment earned $745 million in income. That is in addition to the $107 million in endowment gifts received during that same period, with no doubt a considerable amount available as unrestricted forms. Is that not enough? Perhaps it could also tap the nearly $11 billion in assets they hold in unrelated business assets. For those that are not aware, this component is for activities that WashU undertakes that are not related to education in any way whatsoever. Keeping in mind that it is clear they have no means to do so, yet flaunt in the face of residents that they do not feel they are obligated to help in any way. It's deplorable that we find our city in this position at the hands of Washington University. Shame on you.
That is the last request to speak from a citizen. I believe we have other council members. I'm not certain. Mr. Hales has his light on.
I just wanted to say real quick, I'm hoping we didn't miss anybody, did we, to speak? Had he signed up?
Yeah, not on this. He's on a different item. Yeah, I just wanted to know if you had that. I think I've got a number of citizen comments still to be made in the next section of citizen comments. We went through everything I have down says non-agenda item. Is there someone who wants to speak on WashU? Okay. And that would be I have it down. Are you Peter?
Yes.
I have you down for Olive and 170.
Yeah, and
well, but you got well, there usually there's for each one there's two forms. But
I'm
go ahead.
Sorry about that. Can I address the...
Yes.
Okay.
Please state your name and address.
Yes. My name is Peter Burgess. I live at 755 Radcliffe in U-City. I just want to point out a couple things for larger context, because I know the focus has been on the incident that occurred over the weekend for the Mardi Gras party. But I just wanted to point out that this affects everybody in the city because the demands are put on the budget. Whether you live on Kingsbury or you live in the north part of the Third Ward, it still affects everybody in the city because it puts a drain on the city budget. And if people haven't seen it, they should look up the July 2015 report that was put out by the advisory committee that the council directed to evaluate this issue. It's the U-City, Washington U Advisory Committee, July 15, and in which they had several findings, one of which was that Washington University was the largest property owner in the city, and that if it paid the property taxes that it would if it were not a tax-exempt institution, that they would, and this is in 2015, they would be paying nearly $2 million a year. You compare that to what the city budget is, it is an enormous amount of money. Our tax base isn't enhanced by lots of people moving in. We already have high taxes. It puts a strain on the city because of the shift that goes to all the taxpaying folks that are funding the costs of services being provided to the city residents. It is not unprecedented, by the way, for universities to make payments in lieu of taxes, pilots, to the cities that they are in and on whom they rely for to provide services. Yale in New Haven, Boston and Harvard, Boston U and Harvard to Boston and others. And also, just to give everybody an idea, I mean, we're talking about nearly 3,000 students, at least as of a few years ago, 1,400 of whom are living in WashU-owned housing. And that's property that's paying no property taxes. So this is not a small amount of people we're talking about. And last thing I wanted to is read one finding from the report. WashU tax-exempt properties and the students who live in them currently receive full city services, including police, fire protection, street maintenance, lighting, sewers, public parking lots, and street parking, use of parks and similar services. Using well, I'll skip that part. Basically, I'll sum up with their finding. Based on their methodologies, which I think are quite reasonable, the value of the tax-exempt property to that they estimate the service costs provided to these students is between $2.96 and $3.49 million per year. It's enormous. Thank you.
I believe that is the last request to speak on this item. Mr. Hales.
Thank you. That was actually a great segue talking about the broader impact, because when Steve and I put this on the agenda, it really, even though we've spent a lot of time talking about police and fire, it really was devoted to all of our city resources that are required to provide service for the university. One of the things I did this morning was to, I thought, well, let's, along the lines of what Steve said, you know, some may say, well, the party was at a privately owned apartment building, and that's true. The parties, to the best of my knowledge, were not at university-owned properties. That's not really the issue. I have two pages that I put into this spreadsheet of just the properties in the 6600 block of Washington. The property, St. Louis County property tax records list when they were bought oftentimes, but they list the total number of units. In fact, they refer to them as total living units. And so I went down the entire 6600 block of Washington. And when we're talking about imbalance, this is it. There are 34 parcels that I looked up. 18 of them are registered as being owned by the university. That's 53% of one block on Washington. In total, there are 341 total living units for all of the, and there are a few single family homes on that 6600 block of Washington. There's some two families. There are some larger ones. 341 total units in the 6600 block. 235 of those are Washington University owned units. That is 69% of one block on Washington Avenue. This is where I think we all have to have a conversation, because Ms. Fries, some of the other residents who spoke, Ms. Moran, these folks are caught in the middle of this. You know, yes, I had a question from the fellow at Channel 5. You know, we're next to the university. Some of this comes with the territory. This city was built next to a university. Those neighborhoods were built next to the university. They weren't built to be part of the campus, and that is what has happened. And that is why I think we are having this conversation here tonight, and I think this is not the beginning. This is not a one-and-done conversation that we're going to be having. This conversation started well before this. This conversation is going to continue well after this. But on the subject of just the more broad resources, I hope that we continue to discuss that as well. So thank you very much.
Any other members of council? Ms. Carr.
When I came on to council, I was told, actually before I even asked, that Washington University would not consider a pilot because, after all, they had three cities in which to pay a pilot. After all this time, I'm no longer interested in pilot. I'm interested because it's at their whim. I'm interested in charging them for the services that we deliver. How much does it cost to make sure that we have extra police on staff to cover an event like the Mardi Gras? Because it happens several times a year. Maybe not as dramatic, but it happens several times a year. How much does it cost to make sure that our fire department is covered or that we're covered? We have to bring in our mutual aid for that fire. Just so you know, not all properties that belong to Washington University are on the tax rolls. In fact, I looked at 30 particular properties that are not on the tax rolls. One is a Castle Ray, that is in Ward 1. The rest, I believe, are in Ward 2, Lewis Center, and about 28 buildings in Parkview Gardens. And before you get too excited, every one of those buildings either has or is planning to apply, as Mr. Fox said, for an historic tax credit. So if you can grasp this, 30 buildings, they are put on the tax rolls, essentially owned by a for-profit corporation for a short period of time, in order to take advantage of a tax credit when they, in fact, are not paying property taxes. They do pay some other taxes. They do pay utility taxes, and they probably don't pay sales taxes because they're a not-for-profit organization. So these 30 buildings will stay on during their renovation, and they will be renovated. I've been told that they get renovated to a much higher standard than they would be otherwise if Washington University was just paying for it themselves. And so they will be renovated, and then they will have to be on the tax rolls for 5 years, and they will have to be open to anyone who wants to rent them. And I asked, will any of them stay on the tax rolls? No. I asked if there was any building that would ever stay on the tax rolls, and somebody pointed out to me that I believe the Crescent Building in Cortex will remain on the tax rolls because that's being rented. Now, there are some that have for-profit businesses that are on the tax rolls. Others that don't exactly make sense to me. And as you probably remember, that Peacock Cafe, we made a bargain with Washington University that in building their lofts project, that the commercial portion of their project, remember, this is a mixed-use project, a PUD essentially, and so we gave them all kinds of benefits in terms of parking, relaxed regulations, and I'm saying relaxed, it's not exactly right, but it was clearly to their benefit. We still have a situation where the parking, like Ward 1, is onto our streets in Ward 2, especially Enright. We had to put up signs, and eventually we'll put up parking meters. Why? Because the students don't want to pay the additional cost for a parking sticker to park in that beautiful garage. But we made a bargain with Washington University that they were going to pay
taxes on the commercial segment of that loft's building. Most of it, however, the provisions part, the United Provisions, is in the city. And they indeed did pay the city $60,000 for a couple of years before I discovered that they were not paying the county for the Peacock Cafe. And then, of course, it was, oh, it was the somebody else's fault. I don't know how it is you don't realize that you're not paying taxes, because I clearly know when my bill comes that if I don't pay, I'm somehow going to see the other side of the assessor's office. So it's kind of an attitude. I've given up on looking for a partnership. That's a little sad. I don't view them as a good neighbor. I don't. I don't think that they're a good neighbor. I think good neighbors take care of one another. Good neighbors look out for one another. And I don't think that they do that. So I would encourage my colleagues to continue to look at the zoning that we've been doing. Councilmember Cusick and I are looking at unrelaxing the parking regulations that were done in 2015 that clearly benefited Washington University. And that should come up shortly within the next 2 weeks to 4 months. But there are other things. There are other things that we can take a look at in terms of how we will be compensated for the services delivered. And it's not just necessarily, I mean, as cities look at how they gather revenues. One of the very shocking things that I read recently was that former alderman Scott Ogilvy said that 40% of the property in the city of St. Louis is off the tax rolls. How do you make it? I clearly don't know when 40% is off. It's a problem that needs a solution. And in many senses, that solution, I think, will be found here. I hope that Washington University will come to the table without demands. I believe Mr. Burgess mentioned the report that was done in 2015. That report was disregarded because we were told that Washington University did not have a part in that task force. That task force was a citizen task force with some very, very qualified people on it. And Washington University did make a presentation. And not only that, there was a liaison to Washington University. And that person consulted with Washington University, or at least Cheryl Adelstein, numerous times. I don't know how you can turn down something like that, hands down. I don't know how you can make demands on a city of residents who are picking up the tab for you. I mean, I don't want to necessarily call you freeloaders, but honestly, when people who have to choose between whether they're going to put food on the table or whether they're going to pay the flood insurance for the one little bit of wealth they have is a house in a floodplain. I cannot abide being told that you're not coming to the table. So as strongly as I feel, maybe more strongly than most of my colleagues, and probably without the tact that many of them would use, what I'm saying is that the door is still open. I'm still ready to sit down and talk to you about the impact that you make on our city and how we can mitigate that and be real partners, and good neighbors.
Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to remind everyone again about the Washington University report that was completed in July of 2015, and let everyone know that we are taking that report very seriously and looking at the report and the findings of the report and the recommendations. I'd like to say that one of the things that the report very clearly came out and said was that there is a definite imbalance in the relationship between University City and Washington University City, and University City is on the losing end. The report clearly stated that Washington University should do more, and I would like to say that it is the residents, the taxpayers of University City, that is paying for the higher education of those students at Washington University. There is direct and indirect impacts upon all of us in University City. Directly, the people in the first ward that are having these neighborhood issues and finding students and their bad behaviors on their streets, their parking issues, that's a direct relationship, or that's directly impacting upon them and the quality of their life and the neighborhoods and their homes where they live, and they should feel safe and comfortable and proud to live there. The indirect impact that this has is for the taxes of University City, with all of the tax-exempt properties that are in University City that are Washington University-owned. We have to come up with the amount of monies that we need to pay for our services, and it's the taxpayers that are doing that for and providing services that are not being paid for by Washington University. I want to thank everyone that came out this evening and spoke, and I, as well as all of the members of council, I believe, have been getting receiving emails about what's going on with pilots. And incidentally, I agree with Council Member Carr about the pilot. I don't want a pilot either, because a pilot is voluntary. I want more concrete things that we can do, and we are looking at other things. We aren't just standing up here saying that it would be nice that we can do this. As she mentioned, as Council Member Carr mentioned, we are looking at enforcing our parking and going back to what the parking codes were previous to 2015. We are looking at zoning ordinances and in strengthening those zoning ordinances. We're having a parking study completed so that we can look at the impact of parking in congested areas is and how it affects the people in those neighborhoods, so that they can come home at night or in the evening or on the weekends and they don't have to worry about having to park two or three blocks away. They can park in the front of their homes, the homes in which they pay taxes on. We're looking at possible bed fees, and we're also looking at having a professional impact study done to look at all of University City and see exactly what the benefits are of having the university there or where there's not benefits. So even though we've been listening to you, your concerns, I think that you all should know that we are taking them to heart and we are doing things, that we have been meeting, having zoning meetings and code meetings and enforcement meetings, that we do have things that we are going to be working on and are working on so that we can better this relationship with Washington University. Thank you.
As we move to the next agenda item, I would like to say a couple of things. As I had said to the city manager earlier today, that having such an intelligent and engaged city council actually makes my job as mayor a lot easier. And I think you're seeing tonight how engaged the council is in this issue. Mr. Hales may have taken it to a new depth on Saturday, but really I do think that to all my colleagues, I appreciate that very much. To Ms. Friess, I think you actually summed things up very well. And at times we forget the micro versus the macro. And I lived in Ames Place for 7 years, and it's ebbed and flowed during that time and to this day. And I think this council understands that you each, as residents in the entire city, but in particular the impacted neighborhoods, have a right to live in peace and tranquility. We realize that there are students in the neighborhood. I think OSU also needs to realize that there are homeowners in the neighborhood as well. And I would also say that on a macro basis, I think it is clear, as we've said for some time, that the relationship is out of balance. I believe that probably the Mardi Gras activities have become more of a flashpoint for this conversation, for better or for worse. But I have to say, when you're listening to Siri Moran talk
And she goes to a neighborhood meeting and she says, what are your plans for how to handle Mardi Gras? And they say everything is taken care of. And it's not. I think there is a day of accounting for that, because that really tells me that maybe not everyone is listening or planning. And to Siri and to the rest of the neighbors, you did your part. You did your part. Our neighbor did not. And as far as neighbors go, I would say that at some point in time, there is just the concept, and this is to the students, there is just the concept of being a good person and a good neighbor. And I don't think it's asking too much on the micro basis for the students to apologize. I think on the macro basis, I think it is clear that the council is ready to proceed forward with finding a way to balance this relationship. We would like to balance it in conjunction with the university, but we will balance this relationship. Thank you very much. We have a few other requests to speak on non-agenda items. The next request to speak is Aaron Ginsburg. And again, please state your name and address.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, my name is Aaron Ginsburg. I live at 430 West Point Court, and I have good news to share about University's TNR Advocates and our community kitties. This past month, six more feral cats have been trapped, vaccinated, neutered, and returned. UCity's TNR Advocates will be meeting with Mr. Cross March 22nd to discuss updating the part of our municipal code that pertains to pets. We are proud to partner with UCity's Community Development Department to get UCity's feral cat population under control through an officially sanctioned and humane trap, neuter, vaccinate, return program. Speaking of which, we'll be sharing information about the benefits of TNR at UCity's annual pet clinic on April the 6th at Heeman Park Community Center. I have a flyer with info about the annual pet clinic, so please see me after the meeting if you'd like to know more. I also have flyers covering St. Louis Feral Cat Outreach's low-cost spaying program for community kitties, Carroll House's quick fix, low-cost neutering services for pet dogs and pet cats, and Bi-State Pet Food Pantry's upcoming food distribution dates. Thank you.
I apologize. Our next request to speak is Jerry Bogart. I'm trying to read the writing at 8625 Elmore Court.
Prepared for this. I had just got back in the country yesterday from India.
Okay, if you'd please give your name and address.
Jerry Boone, 8625 Elmore Court, UCity. I'm calling in terms of the project for been made.
Your microphone is not.
Can you hear me now? I see things move faster than this. And I looked over the projects. I didn't have time to prepare and writing and paper, just what I wanted really to say. But this is all about money. No one's really looking at the individual residents in that community. Casa's going to put an anchor store there, which is going to be $15 a minimum an hour for the people there. It's going to help people grow and develop. I never seen no project where it's been going on for 3 years. The last time I seen a meeting on this was nothing happening, waiting on you guys to make a decision. Yes, I wish you would. I mean, I own property in UCity, but I don't live in UCity, but I don't let people rent it or nothing. I keep it open. I keep it insured for uninhabited. I keep the property up and everything. I'm always out of the country. I ain't seen things develop quicker than this. I worked on the World Trade Center when it went down, 9/11, for disasters. Katrina, I ain't seen things move faster than this. I don't understand. For one thing I do know is y'all stakeholders. You as a stakeholder, that's the municipality. The development company is a stakeholder, but then you got outsiders that don't even live in your city as stakeholders. They're not making the right decisions for your city. It's a good, I ain't seen this city, your city, go down. I've been living out there since 61. My parents had the house there. Then my brother had it. He died in February. And now I have it and keeping it up. And there's a couple more properties. I left that property in 72 to go to Vietnam. I did two tours of Vietnam. I came back and looked around how it was looking when it's going down. Looked again, left to town for special missions and stuff. Came back. I'm looking on the other side of the 170. Olivetti is developing, but I'm looking at this side where Jeffrey Plaza is going down, and it's steady going down. Same thing when I did my research at WashU, and I'm a WashU alumni graduate. When they was trying to develop the city corridor, the central corridor of the St. Louis City, they messed that up, and you see how the city of St. Louis look. That's exactly what's going to happen to you, city, going on Olive. You're going to mess up the contract going to expire, and we're not going to go nowhere with this. I mean, I'm not a politician. I'm an engineer and stuff. I develop things, and I make decisive decisions to what needs and troubleshoot. But you guys are sitting around. A decision needs to be made. We've been waiting 3 years. I called and today. The only reason why I know it was a meeting today because I called and said, what's going on out there? Any decisions made? And I ran over here as quick as I could. Never got a chance to get ready, address it for it. But I want to know what's going on. You know, this is ridiculous. It's a yes or no. Do make a decision. It's the people of the city, of the residents of your city, should be making the decision. You guys work for the citizens of your city. They are the main stakeholders. And that's all I wanted to say. I had to get that off my chest because I've just been waiting 3 years to see what's going on. I'm developing. And every time I go out of town, I'll be gone 3 months, 4 months. I mean, I just developed a project we did in India. Bigger than New City, and then it takes them 9 months. I mean, is a third world country make decisive decisions quicker than we can make it? Something we ought to think about. Thank you.
Next request to speak is Greg Pace.
Sorry, old and slow. Greg Pace, 7171 Westmoreland. Several topics came up, and I really wasn't planning on speaking too much, but I guess my first outrage is the Mardi Gras party, and I didn't get invited. Were there beads, Jeff? Was that part of the... Come on, I'm just trying to lighten up the mood. In solidarity, I will not be given to WashU anymore. Okay. Being serious... Jeff mentioned the fire contract that Clayton has with Washington University. Sometime back, I put the fire brass in contact with Cheryl Edelstein and said, hey, guys, go over there and get this contract. At that point, it was up to around $350,000 a year. We could do it without any additional cost, I thought, and we have a larger department than Clayton. I thought we had a good story. I don't even know if they followed up. I don't know if anybody on this council has followed up. We should be lobbying for that contract, folks. I mean, it's $350,000 laying on the table. WashU could, you know, buy some goodwill by giving that contract to us, but we got to go for it. I was on that WashU advisory board. I was the lone nay vote on the report. It's flawed. The previous speaker talked about that's in the report how the services that the residents of the WashU property they get and they amount to so much. And in the report, it doesn't show that WashU only not pays and the residents property tax, real property tax, which is, last time I checked, was 14% of our budget. So 86% of our budget, all those taxes, fees, and whatever, they're not exempt, WashU and their residents, so they pay that. So it's only 14% that they're not paying. And that was a big miss as far as I was concerned in the report. All right, to what I was going to talk about, Ms. Carr in her newsletter, in context of Better Together, made the statement that she would not advocate for debt for a police facility until the statewide vote. I absolutely agree with that. I think this council should move to put the $6 million that we borrowed for the police substation back and put a hold on the police substation until the vote. I have been against the police substation from the beginning, but now I have Ms. Carr as an advocate, and she clearly said no debt for our police facility, and I'm sure that she will then be advocating with the rest of you folks for a resolution to put a stop or at least to put a hold on that project. The other thing I want to comment on was the pay ordinance that was recently passed. It seems fiscally irresponsible. I didn't have a chance to review it for the final vote. My apologies. I do a lot of research, but I can't get to everything. Once I looked at it, it seemed crazy. As an example, we recently hired a director of communications, and I was told that the salary was $93,000 for that person coming in. As of March 1st, with this new pay ordinance, that pay jumped up to $104,000. That's an $11,000 increase. That's insane. This person was just hired, and we then give them another $11,000? Is that fiscally responsible? Anybody want to shake their heads? Yes? Really? Council? Anybody? The firefighters, paramedic firefighter pay, the privates, top pay went from 69.6 grand to 80.3 grand. That's a 15% increase. That's, whoa. It takes 5 years to get to top pay. It doesn't take long. And hey, you know, the cost of returning EMS to U.S. City just went up, folks, just went up a lot. You know, of course, I'm against that. And I want one closing statement. If this council does win and if return EMS to U.S. City, I would suggest that, because council is all about the people on this one, about the service and safety of the individuals. I've been told many times it has nothing to do with being subservient to 2665. So if that's the case, I would urge council to instruct the city manager that if we take that service back, that we post our ambulances, just like Gateway does. Send the crew out for 4 hours at a time, say. They post in an optimal position, and that way they get to the scene much faster. Instead of 90 seconds turnout time, it's 30 seconds or less, and they can equate the faster times that we're seeing with Gateway. So I would suggest that they post up 4 hours, go back to the house, change positions with the two truck crew guys, and they or women, and then they go back out.
Pace, your time has elapsed.
Just about, sir. Just a couple seconds.
Well, it actually has elapsed, but okay.
I know, but just asking for a little break here. And so I think that the council should urge the city manager to do exactly what I'm saying, is post our ambulances. And I'm sure the union would be all for that, you know, because hey, they're all about the people of U City and serving us best. Thank you.
Next request to speak is Ms. Jane Adams.
Jan Adams, 7150 Cambridge Avenue. The doublespeak that our politicians engage in never ceases to amaze and amuse me. At the last council meeting, our members were complaining about how the Better Together merger would put them out of their part-time job. Their statements included, quote, we should have self-determination, and, quote, we will be disenfranchised. People must have the right to determine their destiny. We would have government without representation. These are direct quotes from each member of council, or separate members of council. The irony, when a number of residents and businesses in the footprint of the proposed Olive development and the many citizen advocates called for an open debate and a public vote on the value of the city to the city of the Costco development, these same council members ignored them. This council avoided introducing the proposed development before the April 2018 election, and then immediately went directly to a TIF commission without any public input or debate or vote by the citizens.
At the second public meeting, every council member said they were in favor of the development, and under the procedures set by this council, they are the only ones who get to vote. The first TIF meeting was held in a facility that was limited to 350 people, so hundreds of citizens could not even attend. The second meeting again attempted to limit the number of people able to attend by issuing a notice that participation would be limited and citizens who had spoken at the first meeting could not speak again. So there had to be a third meeting, which would likely not have occurred if this council had not been charged with sunshine violations. These events demonstrate a concerted effort to disenfranchise U City residents on the development issue. And now these same council members now complain that they will be disenfranchised, not because they cannot vote, but because their votes will be diluted by other Missouri citizens. This is blatant hypocrisy. Balance people who want to vote about keeping their homes and businesses versus you wanting to vote about keeping a part-time job. Furthermore, Jeff Hales informed us that he went to Jeff City and told our state representatives that the majority of his constituents were against the merger. Really? Based on what, Mr. Hales? I'm a constituent, and you did not ask me. I have not seen a citywide survey nor any notice of a public meeting to obtain opinions of all the U-City citizens. There is not even an opportunity to express our opinions in our city's Facebook page. This council has approved the hiring of a communications director with a starting salary of $93,000 and within weeks of her being hired was raised over $104,000. With a very generous benefit package that will cost taxpayers well over $100,000 a year. If any council member presumes to speak for the majority of you city residents, then it is incumbent upon you to at least take a survey or provide a platform for public comments so you have again disenfranchised us. Speaking of the new communications director, I believe that most of us will agree that good communications is a two-way street. However, our new communications director not only does not answer questions to the comments that she posts on social media, but she or someone with control of the city's Facebook page takes down the questions I have posed. So far, all I have seen are posts of a few city and school events and notices of public meetings. How does this council justify well over $100,000 per year for what is basically a clerical job? The cost of all of our new hires for middle management, along with the nearly $250,000 paid to the city attorney in 1 year, and the anticipated increase for bringing the ambulance service back in-house will raise our expenses $1 to $2 million annually. The mayor stated at the last council meeting that we are not yet in a deficit budget, but we are very close. Nevertheless, this council voted in a compensation schedule that allows the city manager to pay each and every employee the upper limit of the compensation schedule at his sole discretion. Did any of you read the small print in that ordinance? And now Paulette Carr states in her newsletter that regardless of the Better Together merger and the lack of any financial analysis of its impact, I have one more sentence. Mr. Mayor, may I finish? She wants to proceed with the Olive development, but cut street repairs and funds for the police station to offset any loss of revenue. I am looking forward to reviewing our budget for 2020. Thank you, and I submit my written comments for attachment to the minutes of the record.
Our next request to speak is Peter Burgess.
Hello, I am here to speak about two issues related to the Olive 170 TIF project. The first is the inadequacy of the briefing project.
Can you give your name and address?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Peter Burgess. I live at 755 Radcliffe in U Heights. The first is in the inadequacy of the briefing process for this project. My criticism isn't about the number of meetings, limitations placed on attending, or opportunities for all stakeholders to participate. Rather, what
project was actually being discussed. In a couple significant ways, we now know that the project that was advertised to public stakeholders is different than what it is now, and that once the actual structure and projections are determined, than what it is now, and that once the actual structure and projections are determined, that it then should be properly briefed. The most significant of these changes to the project is the disappearance of $25 million in sales tax revenues, more than $1 million a year spread out over 23 years. This is money that the city had banked on receiving in its budget, including in its assumptions, and pointed to in order to garner support for the project, and now it's gone. The project had been advertised getting these funds, and now it won't, and that's a major impact. The other change of the project I wanted to highlight is something that would seemingly be at the heart of why this project is supposedly so needed. Existing businesses aren't doing it for the city, and a major TIF project like this is needed to increase revenues. So it's pretty important to accurately reflect the amount of revenues those businesses are generating. Unfortunately, that's not what happened here. The developers' figures, which the city relied on, greatly underestimated the amount of revenues that these existing businesses were generating. The developer said it was $6 million, and the actual figure was $10 million. That's 67% higher than what was originally said. That figure got corrected, but the story had already been told, and it reflected the artificially low revenues of existing businesses, making the TIF proposal look more attractive. And these are just the major changes to the deal that we know about. Then there are the 19 changes that the developer has requested of the city at the last minute after the development contract was already submitted on the agenda. We don't know anything about those at this point, but it stands to reason that since the developer is requesting them, they wouldn't make the deal any better for the city. I think that to be consistent with what its stated commitment to public engagement is with this project, the council should hold briefings for the new version with stakeholders and allow for comment before it is brought to council for consideration. Lastly, I've communicated with the city manager about a deal term that is often included in big box development projects that can be harmful to cities that agree to it. It is the use of deed restrictions being placed on the big box property, which would forbid any future sale to a competitor. Cities who have allowed non-compete restrictions have been left with buildings that are vacant or underutilized because they're only suitable for another big box retailer, and those are excluded from purchasing them. The city manager has informed me he's not decided what his recommendation to the mayor and city council will be on the deed restriction term. I urge all council members to be aware of this and reject any such provision as it threatens to leave the city with a useless shell of a building if the big box retailer moves on after the TIF bonds are repaid. Thank you.
Our last request to speak is Stephen Glicker.
Good evening. Steve Glickert, 7750 Blackberry. Sorry I'm late to the party. I had to work because I got to pay taxes to float our neighbor to the south. A couple things. I wanted to thank Mr. Smotherson, Mr. Clay, Mr. Rose, and our police department for gaining some traction on our zoning violations that I brought to your attention back in August. Very much appreciated. Also wanted to say thank you for the communication via email, keeping me informed and of the progress that's being made on those concerns. And in those emails, you'd mentioned a guideline or an etiquette booklet that you're assembling. I believe that's a great idea to provide guidance and some education to our residents who are not aware of our zoning codes that exist, and to help them bring them up to speed to be a better neighbor. And speaking of being a better neighbor, what a segue. I'd like to say thanks and congratulations to Mr. Hale for the letter that he provided to our not-so-nice neighbor to the south. As I mentioned on a social site, I'm happy that you were behind that letter and not me, because the language would have been I would have chosen would have been cut by the censors. So again, job well done. And I just wanted to touch on some more of that with it's a statement that was made, apparently sent to the entire student body at Washington University and published in the Post-Dispatch in a response to an unfortunate incident that occurred back in July with Washington University students at the IHOP restaurant in Clayton. Mr. Mark Wrighton, Chancellor of the University, responded within 2 days of the student to the student body in an email, and rightfully so, on that situation. And in the body of that statement was a paragraph that I thought was very appropriate for Mr. Wrighton to listen to his own words instead of just inflecting them on others. And it was, quote, "I want to be very clear. This situation is unacceptable. It runs counter to our university's core values of mutual respect. We will not tolerate this kind of behavior on our campuses, and we expect it to be addressed appropriately elsewhere," unquote. It would seem to me that that statement, that Mr. Wrighton's is not a man of integrity, and obviously hypocritical, when he's quick to denounce someone else's mistakes and clearly ignores his own words. Do as I say, not as I do. Huh, Mr. Wrighton. I guess it's okay for people within your own institution to have unruly behavior, destruct or damage public and private property, allowing minors in possession of alcohol, disrespect for a law officer, failure to disperse, littering, vandalism, trespassing, public urination. That's really nice behavior. I'm sure you're very proud. And I can speak personally. I had my mother-in-law lived in the 400 block of Melville. My brother and sister-in-law lived in the 300 block of Melville. Their garages were spray-painted with political messages. I don't see a regular vandal doing that. The city trees were damaged on a regular basis. The trash, the urination. It's a consistent problem, and it has been for years. So I'm glad you're addressing that. And I just wanted Mr. Wrighton to know that Mr. Rogers won't be asking you or any other of your hooligans from Washington University to be his neighbor. Thank you.
That concludes the citizen participation portion of the agenda. Council comments. Any of my colleagues have additional comments for the evening before we move? Mr. Hales.
Just one very brief, and I think it needs to be said, and these folks need to be recognized, but a week ago Saturday, I cannot thank our city manager enough for his response, our police chief. And also I think it's important to recognize our city inspectors because they – am I out of town?
Sorry, that was not you.
our city inspectors have also been on this. And as we move forward, I think the city manager has been clear, and I think the council is very much on the same page that this is a all-of-the-above approach – to addressing some of these issues. So thank you to Gregory for taking my call, which he does at all hours of the day, and I know that's true for all of us. And the response from our police department was, and I will say also the two WashU police officers, was outstanding. So thank you.
With that being said, I would welcome a motion that we go into closed session regarding to Missouri Revised Statute 610.021, legal actions, causes of actions, or litigation involving a governmental body. Motion made by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Clay. Would you please call the roll for the roll call vote?
Council Member Cusick.
Aye.
Council Member Smotherson.
Aye.
Council Member Clay.
Aye.
Council Member Carr.
Aye.
Council Member McMahon.
Aye.
Council Member Hales.
Aye.
And Mayor Crow.
Aye. Thank you very much for coming this evening.